This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I am Tara Carter from Clovis, New Mexico.
And I'm Lindsay Fitch from Boulder, Colorado. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 28th, episode 2358. This episode is brought to you by Horsewear. Good morning, Horse World.
Good Tuesday morning to you. And I do mean a good Tuesday morning.
Well, if you insist on being accurate about it.
You know, only somebody with perfect comedic timing could produce this much energy in one shot.
You gotta learn that your time in the saddle ain't as rough as the life in between. And the fence isn't there for you to straddle. And you can't change horses in the middle of your dream.
Well, thank you for joining us on the fourth Tuesday of the month where we have the Western Day episode. You can find out more on horsesinthemorning.com. You can look in for the icon in the middle of the page to find our past episodes. But what do we have coming up on today's show, Lindsay?
On today's show, we have our Bridle Up segment where we're going to have Trevor Carter continue talking about the snaffles in the vaquero bridle horse tradition. We're going to have our learning and discipline segment where we're covering the NRCHA horse with Kelly Buckley. And we're also going to have our congrats in coming up.
So Lindsay, since we last visited, it was before the holidays, before Christmas. What have you been up to since we talked last?
Well, just a lot of holiday stuff. I've actually did something kind of fun for a little side project over the holidays is I took some old team roping ropes that we had laying around and I made some holiday wreaths with horseshoes and flowers and some neat things like that. So that was kind of fun to do while we had lots of snow on the ground. And then I had some family visiting in from Florida and we took their girls sledding behind our horses and pulled them on a sled with a rope and they'd never done anything like that, and they're just absolutely horse crazy. They're, I think, 5 and 8, so they had lots of fun writing their name in the snow while they were riding around on the horses and going sledding and seeing all the cows and everything like that. So what about you, Tara?
Well, I did receive my rope wreath from you, so thank you very much. Actually, I know you're like, when you get it, open it up so I can see it and know what it looks like. I'm so worried about how it traveled, but I haven't opened it because we left before Christmas and we decided to go skiing and we took the kids skiing. And I was like, if she's worried about packaging it up correctly, I'm extra worried about packaging it up correctly. So I'm going to open it before Christmas next year and we're going to really see how well it was packaged.
Oh, you have to open it now and see what it looks like. Cause yours is, I made yours not just like Christmassy themed, like it's kind of winter themed. So it'll still look good until it's like real springtime with flowers coming up and blooming and things. So,
okay.
Well, you have to open it.
Okay. Well, I'll open it and post a picture then. Okay.
All right.
Well, good. We went skiing. It was our first time ever going skiing with our whole family. Like I've gone skiing before and Trevor's gone skiing before. So we did that. We took our kids and had the best time ever. And then we came back and we went to the Fort Worth Stock Show and Rodeo, which we go to every year. It's such a tough show, but it's such a fun show. You know, it's kind of everybody kicks off the year at that event. But this year we got to go to the new Dickies Arena, which they've been building, I don't know, last couple of years, probably longer than that. But it was open and it is incredible. It's beautiful. We got to go to the Ranch Rodeo. And you know, when you go to a football game, they have the camera that like flies through the air, you know, so you can catch all the great shots. They had that even for the Ranch Rodeo. So you got to watch this huge live screen on the TV. It's not as big as the Cowboy Stadium one, but it was just so impressive and it was bright and it kept all the same feel, but it also had a more modern, I don't know. It's just so well done. So that was really neat to be able to see the new Dickies Arena. So Then we went to Art of the Cowgirl. Just got back from that yesterday, actually. And second year for the event. It grew again. Even better horses, even better vendors, even better riders. A lot of the same, but you know, they just shows how hard they've worked in the past year to up their game. And so just an inspiring event. So that's what I've done. And then, so that's kind of what we've been doing.
Y'all have been busy.
I know we have. So
well, let's move.
Let's see if we can get Trevor off of a horse and come in here and talk to us a little bit about our next segment of the Snaffle Bit. It's time for the Bridle Up segment, where we're currently going through each of the stages of the Vaquero bridle horse tradition, the Snaffle, the Hackamore, the Two-Rein, and the Bridle. We're progressing through the series with Trevor Carter and gaining his insight on the form and function of each tool, how to choose the best fit for you and your horse, and training tips for using and progressing with each. In previous episodes, we covered the overall tradition of the bridle horse, and we started to dive into the Snaffle Bit and the form and the function. Today, we're going to ask Trevor what he looks for when he buys a Snaffle setup and what he looks for when putting it on his horse. So thanks for joining us today, Trevor.
You bet. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit. We'll start. I mean, the things that we would talk about when we're going to put together a Snaffle setup, you know, what are the basic components? And then we'll maybe talk about what you look for in each of those.
So I'll talk about the headgear first, because usually a Snaffle goes on a green horse or a young horse. And with the green horse comes a little bit of displaced behavior. So what I mean by that is you're going to help this horse understand how to control its emotions, how to focus this horse, and this horse might get a little distracted, or the sessions might be a little bit long. And what I'm getting at is they might get to where they get a little itchy and they might try to scratch their headgear off. So anytime I put a Snaffle on, I try to put a brow band headstall on. Sometimes people put on a split ear or a single ear headstall. And if a horse is rubbing his head, he can just slip that headstall off, and then you're stuck with a bridleless horse. So first off, just the head carriage. I want to be sure that I have a brow band headstall. Just sometimes that can be missed. But moving forward, what I look for in a Snaffle, if I'm going to introduce my horse to something in his mouth, I want to get it as loose as I can. So an O-ring Snaffle, a loose ring Snaffle, some call it that. It has a lot of mobility. It still functions like a Snaffle, but the cheek pieces are not fixed. And so that would be the first one I would offer my horse to wear, because they're going to be really mouthy and moving it in their mouth. And, you know, having that loose ring, it just allows them to migrate that Snaffle in their mouth. And you want to be sure you have a chin strap. So it doesn't have to be a tight chin strap. The only function of the chin strap is so that if you pull right and the horse goes left, you're not pulling the headstall through the horse's mouth. So a curb strap has no function for leverage on a Snaffle, but it just helps keep that Snaffle in the horse's mouth. So that would be the first one I would offer my horse. And there's different kinds of Snaffles. You can go on the internet and look. There's egg butt Snaffles. There's a D-ring Snaffle. And what those help is when you – they help with the outside of the horse's mouth. So I want you to think of – coming to pressure and moving away from pressure. So a deal y'all can do is just, you know, use your index finger and just pull on the right side of your mouth. That's having the horse give to pressure. And so that's when I pull on the right rein that touches the side of my horse's mouth. I want them to move to pressure. Now moving away from pressure, take your right hand and push on the left side of your lip and pull your cheek to the right. So you want your horse to move away from pressure. So that's the outside part of the Snaffle. And when you want to progress to that, that's where you start using a D-ring or an egg butt Snaffle. That helps keep that Snaffle from traveling through the horse's mouth.
And then what kind of, you know, the last part, you've talked about the headstall, you've talked about the Snaffle, you've talked about the chin strap. And then what about reins? What sort of setup? You know, you can talk about the setups that are available or the setups that and or the type that you prefer to use.
Yep. So, you know, starting off, you know, split reins, leather reins, an easy picture for everybody to see. You know, leather reins on a Snaffle, it's pretty common. But if you plan to, you know, do a lot of getting off or leading your horse across things, I might recommend a McCarty line setup. You know, it's a long rope that has a loop set of reins and a lead rope, and it's got a deal called a rein leather that attaches your rope to the snaffle. The function of those, the McCarty line usually has more of a delayed signal. It has a situation where the horse can feel the weight coming out before the pressure is applied, whereas the split reins or a solid rein on the horse is a direct feel. So, you know, I would think the split reins are a little more refined. Once the horse is gathering and figuring out how to move off the snaffle, I would progress then to a split rein. Because again, dealing with a snaffle bit horse, they're green. They might have a few displaced behaviors, and they might accidentally get the reins in their mouth, and they might chew up your nice split rein. So using a McCarty line, that rope, it might be a little more forgiving when they start gnawing on it.
And what about weight of reins? Like, there's a lot of people that have really, really, really lightweight reins, like a medium weight and a heavyweight. Can you talk a little bit about the difference of why those weights are important and what they, what the purpose of them is for?
You bet. And so going with the green horse, and if I say green horse, I'm always thinking of the first introduction. And so, you know, some of these green horses, they're really head shy. It can be a lot for them to gather having something in their mouth. And so if you have a really set of heavy reins, you want to think and take into account the horse's motion and the movement. So at a walk, it may not be very visible, but when you start trotting that horse and loping that horse, you know, those reins might really get to slinging around if they're really heavy. And I've had some horses where I didn't take that into account. And as we're loping across the pasture, those reins would come up and hit him in the side of the cheek and just kind of startle him. So I want to think of if where I live, the wind blows. So if I have too light of reins, if the wind is, you know, if we got a pretty good breeze of, you know, 15 knots to 20 knots, it's going to move my reins and my horses are actually going to follow that feel. So on days like that, I might use a little bit heavier rein. But the main function of weight is to help the release for the rider. When you apply the pressure, you can release the horse and the weight of the reins put all the slack back in, so the horse feels an instant release. And so if you choose to use a heavy rein, I just wanted to say that in the beginning, because I didn't even realize that till my rein started hitting my horse in the face. I didn't realize that was a situation that could hinder the education. But I like to test my horses to where, you know, as they're progressing, I put a little bit heavier weight rein on there so that I can apply a little bit slower progression of pressure and see if they can pick up on it sooner. So, you know, having weighted reins, I take into account the weather. You know, I also want to take into account the sensitivity of my horse, because some horses, too much weighted reins can really bother them. So, and I want to put in there too, that horse that was really bothered by those weighted reins, it actually learned how to travel smoother and it kept those reins quiet. So, you know, having that weighted rein, you can help the horse gather a good cadence to its stride and it becomes really rhythmic.
So that question actually leads me to want to ask you about leather split reins. So I was just at an event this weekend and they had a lot of nice gear, and I'd be sending Trevor pictures asking, well, do you like this or what about this? And one thing that gives me anxiety when I look at good gear or trying to purchase gear is split leather reins. What do you prefer? Like, to me, there's options of, you know, all the same length, they get weighted at the end, you can have them long. Like, what either are the different choices in leather reins, and or what is your choice in leather split reins?
So going along Lindsay's question too, with the weighted rein, some of those can be double stitched. So they have two sets of reins sewn together. And so those are really heavy. That puts a lot of drape, a lot of slack in your rein. It helps maintain a loose rein. That's the reason they're weighted, so that the horse can have no feel on his mouth until you truly pick up on him. But I don't like to have them too light. I want my leather reins to be of good leather. And so what I mean by that is just, you know, take some leather and just bend it and see how pliable it is. I like a 3/4 inch to a 1/2 inch size split rein. 3/4 are pretty thick, but that way I can feel it in my hands. But there's a wide variety, like you said, of different sizes. But I don't like getting too thin of rein to where you know, it feels like I have thread in my hands. I want to have a good thickness to it. Like I said, the pliability has got to be really important. And as you said, the weighted reins on the end, that's more just to keep them down, dragging on the ground so they don't get tangled up in your hands.
What about, so like when I think of thickness, I think, you know, if I was to pinch the rein, that's thickness to me. Do they vary in width of rein? Like the, you know, if you were to hold them in your hand, how much of your fingers would be left to curl around?
Well, that's where they get into the double stitch. So usually the thickness is, you know, just over a quarter of an inch. So that, you know, the hide can't be any thicker than a cowhide. So you want to be or latigo. So you want to be sure that if you get it double stitched, that's going to be a pretty bulky rein in your hand. So usually they're just a single leather, and you're talking more about the width.
Okay.
And so the width versus the thickness.
What about how you connect leather reins versus like McCarty reins?
So with McCarty reins, usually, you know, you can have horsehair reins, you can have rope reins. Some people use parachute cord. There's all styles of ropes that you can use for your reins. But if you just think of like a latigo or a billet, you know, that's usually what the rein leather is attached to the snaffle. Whereas when you have split reins, you know, they've got a little keeper on the end that you can just tie a nice little square knot and it's connected. Sometimes with split reins, people wrap those reins around the fence and the horse sets back and boom, it breaks your reins. So, you know, when you attach your reins to the snaffle, some people use a clip, you know, if they've got lots of different styles of snaffles and you only have a few set of reins, you could put snaps on the end of it. The only thing about a snap is there's a lot of activity. You know, if you think of like an earring, if you have a dangling earring and you're trotting, that earring is always moving in your ear. So you want to think when that snap is connected to that snaffle, that's kind of, to me, it's static. You know, it's like white noise. It just to me, it agitates me. So I want to be sure that I try to attach, you know, my reins directly to the snaffle.
And what about care for your equipment? Like we've gone over the different styles of reins and things. Like how do you keep them clean or oiled or well conditioned? What are your do's and don'ts of your experience?
What I like to use olive oil. And so, you know, whether I'm cleaning my headstalls or my reins or my saddles, I try to use some really good olive oil. That tends to last really well. And I'm out here in a dry climate, so I try to do it at least 3 to 4 times a year. And what I'm really careful of is if any of my gear gets wet, so whether it accidentally gets rained on or if I'm taking my horses to water a bunch and they're drinking in my gear, I try to keep an eye on it and not let it get too dry. And so I try to, mink oil is really good. Olive oil I try to use quite a bit, but the biggest thing is just keeping it clean and hung properly. And so split reins are a must. You know, there's a lot of videos out there that, you know, you can show you the correct way how to hang your split reins. You don't want to be the gunsel that just puts them up incorrectly. It's hard for me to describe that on a microphone. But as far as care goes, what I try to do, whether it's a McCarty line or a split rein, I try to hang my stuff as it sits on my horse. And so I try to keep my reins behind my headstall, and I try to keep my reins even as they hang on the tack room wall. That way I can always look and get a quick glimpse of seeing where my gear is. And if it's unbalanced or if it's out of sorts, I go over and check it out. And if it needs some care, then I'll go and give it. And usually what I do around here is on a bad weather day, which we don't have very many of, I'll dust my stuff off and I'll apply some olive oil to it.
I'm going to jump in here now because being an English rider primarily, I'm all about snaffles. When it comes to snaffle bits, I would love to hear your take on care, because sometimes you get the snaffle bits, particularly if it's an egg butt or a D-ring style, they want to get squeaky in that hinge that you're there. Or you might have some that want to be rusty or some that are supposed to be rusty. Where do you land on taking care of the bits?
Yep. So I don't mind a little bit of rust on my bridles as long as I'm aware of the reason I'm doing it. And so, you know, the folks that I've learned from, you know, rust, you know, it helps them salivate. It doesn't hinder. It's a mineral, really. So, you know, when the horse is able to accommodate that in their mouth. I don't try to get rid of the rust. You know, I used to live in a really humid climate, and so my gear would just rust all the time. And so I would kind of, before I'd put it in my horse's mouth, make sure the function of it was good. And if it wasn't functioning, I wouldn't mind putting a little bit of WD-40 on it. Ah! And
on the not mouthpiece part.
Well, and so what I would do on the functioning part of the bridle that's really stuck, I've got to weigh my options. Do I put that in my horse and let my horse work it out? Or do I apply WD-40 and wipe it away the best I can and then dip it in, you know, some water, or heck, I've even used some Listerine just to make sure I get rid of all that, you know, supposed toxic stuff before I put it in my horse's mouth. But no, I don't just apply WD-40 and then put it in my horse's mouth.
Don't spray WD-40 in your horse's mouth. That's not what we're saying.
No, I'm not trying to say that. No, but if that's what I'm saying, if my bit is so rusted that it is lacking function, well, then I might wait a couple days and, make sure all those hinges are nice and loosened up, or I might look to hang it up on the wall inside the house and go get another one. Yeah.
There's a difference. Again, this is coming from the point of view of an English rider.
You bet.
And as an English rider, I'm less familiar with the assortment of different metals that might be available to your, in your typical bits marketed towards the Western market. The type of bit you're probably seeing a lot in your tack room is a type of metal that is designed so it can naturally develop the rust or corrosion on the exterior Correct. Of it. And it's designed to do that way. So as that happens, it's not something that's sharp and nasty versus a stainless steel bit that Correct. Develops pits that are rust, which are sharp.
Yes. Yes.
Two different things.
You hit the nail on the head. Yes, ma'am. And that's the thing. On those loose ring snaffles, usually the ring is stainless steel. And the mouthpiece is that iron that allows that little bit of rust. So, yeah, I'm always checking. That's what, you know, like when Lindsay asked about the care, I'm always, you know, as I'm walking to my horse or if I'm going to ride a lot of snaffle bit horses that day, I carry my snaffle bit out and just check my hinges and make sure everything's good. And I try to clean them after every ride as well, just because I ride a lot of different horses. So that's one way to keep track of your gear. But it was a good point you made about a stainless steel bit rusting. That's where it can become pretty rough on them.
And I have one more snaffle bits question, and then I'll stop hijacking the interview. Are there any types, this is a better question. Are there any red flags that someone should be looking for that's going to tell them that they've got a snaffle bit in their horse's mouth that is just not the right fit? Or is there something that I should be watching for going, oh shoot, that bit doesn't fit that horse.
You know, you first want to measure, you know, the width of your horse's mouth. And you go, how do you do that? Well, just put like a ruler on top of their nose and see what the measurement is on the outside of their muzzle. And so sometimes people can buy a snaffle that's just not wide enough. And so it's constantly pinching. You know, if you just take your index fingers and push in on your lips and your cheeks, like that can be really irritating. So I'd first get a measurement. I believe the standard length, if I could be incorrect, but I think it's about 5.5. But they do make a lot of different widths for horses. You know, some horses' muzzles are quite a bit wider. And so I want to be sure to check the width of that snaffle, because if it's just caving in on my horse's mouth, it's really hard to offer my horse a good feel. It's just like a hat. If your hat's too small, it's going to give you a headache before you can ever really enjoy wearing it. So I would first make sure the bit is wide enough to fit in your horse's mouth. And then as far as the actual fit, I don't like to tighten my head stall so tight that I have wrinkles on my horse's mouth, but I try to get it to where it's just snug, just like a good shoe. Like when the shoe fits, it's not cramming your toes and it's not hurting your heels. It just fits. So when I hang that snaffle in that horse's mouth, I want it to be just resting on the top of their mouth. But for sure, the first thing I check, Jen, is the width of the bridle. That's usually where most of the common problems start.
What about, I know sometimes I've picked up snaffles and I've showed it to you and you've said, oh, I don't like that type because I think it pinches the side of their mouth. What, like, how do you, you know, I always feel like I have to show it to you and be like, is this one of those? So how would you describe that?
Sometimes with a snaffle, with an O-ring snaffle, sometimes that can pinch the side, you know, with the egg butt where it hinges, sometimes that can pinch. But the biggest thing is be aware, be cautious. They actually sell some protective, like little plastic deals. like called, you know, bit protectors. You can put them in between the horse's lips and the bridle if you're really concerned about that. But I try to, you know, I tend to ride my horses 45 minutes to an hour and a half if I'm going through a large string. But if I'm out riding them all day, you know, I'll constantly check to make sure if they're getting rubbed or not. But it's just something to pay attention to, the hinge and the function. So I've got a D-ring, or sorry, I've got an egg butt that's over 20 years. And so it's really loose. The hinges are starting to have a wider gap, and I can see that it's starting to pinch. And so it's about time for me to hang it up. You know, I've had it's been used almost every single day I've ridden a horse. And so that hinge has worn itself so wide that when it engages, it can't help but grab a little bit of skin and pinch. So, you know, first when you buy them, you know, it's really hard to simulate putting it in a horse's mouth, but just see how fluid the hinges are. And just know going into it, when you apply a snaffle to a horse's mouth, you know, it's hanging there. They might lip it. They might try to bite on it and chew on it. It just takes a little bit of time to where that horse's mouth gets used to it.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of times we are able to go to trade shows that have lots of, you know, used gear that's for sale. And so it's helpful to know that, oh, I might be getting a great deal on this really nice, you know, used bit, but it could also be that sort of situation where it's lost its function.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what about head stalls? When you go to head stall leather, is there a certain type of leather that you like? Do you try to, you know, how do you choose when you get one that has silver or just buckles, or, you know, kind of what do you look for in your head stall purchases?
So being picky, I can be these days, but when I first started out, I would buy head stalls and I wouldn't know the difference of quality leather versus premium leather and, like you said, buckles and whatnot. So first off, you want to think of how is your head stall attached to itself? Is it stitched? Is it riveted? Or does it have screws? And so with these screws, sometimes when you buy head stalls and you do a lot of riding, those screws can actually come loose. So maybe a little tidbit, if you do buy a head stall that has some screws in it, you can drop some nail polish in there or some super glue and solidify that screw to where your head stall won't come apart. Because I've been guilty of that, where I was riding along, all of a sudden my head stall comes detached from the snaffle. And it was all because I didn't tighten the screw down. And so another thing I want to look for material is, you know, if I can get that piece of leather in my fingers and just start bending on it, if it starts cracking with just a little bit of flexibility, you know, obviously it's dry, it needs some conditioning, but you just want to be careful of what you pay for. And so I try to test the pliability, just like those reins. I want to see a head stall that's oiled. I would like to see the maker oil. And now, again, if you go to a tack store, usually they're going to have a lot of common head stalls, and it's an that's an easy way to get into the game. But if you're really looking to get some really quality gear, really test it and feel it in your hands and check out the whole head stall, the brow band, the throat latch, down where the snaffle connects. Just check out the gear. And as far as buckles, if I'm just getting a good functioning working head stall, I want to check those buckles. How easy is it to, you know, lengthen and shorten the head stall, because you don't want to put a snaffle on a horse's mouth and then struggle with the buckle when you're trying to tighten or loosen it. You want to check the function of those buckles. Is it smooth? Is it easy to work? And a lot of my working head stalls are stainless steel. But sometimes when you get into some silver, sometimes they're silver plated. Sometimes they're sterling silver. That's where you start to do a little bit pricier head stall. But for the most part, really put it in your hands and feel it. And work it in your hands to see if it's a good quality feel. And I would always recommend trying a lot of different head stalls before you make a purchase. If you've got four booths or four tack stores you can go to, try out all the head stalls in your hands and then compare them and make the best judgment.
Where do you look for this equipment? Do you have favorite stores that you shop in person? Do you shop online? Like where do you like to buy all of your equipment, and where do you look for it the most?
So, you know, it's a good question because I have a lot of favorites. You know, starting off, what I try to do for head stalls is, you know, if I'm just getting a working head stall, there's a place called National Roper Supply. and they've got bulk equipment. So if you need a wide range of different headstalls, a wide range of styles, a wide range of different reins, that's an easy way to go shopping. Like, you don't have to purchase anything, but you can just go graze and look around. But as far as if I wanted some really nice gear, what I try to do from a headstall standpoint is there's some really nice shops out west. And a couple places that I like to go, it's called JM Capriola, and they're in Elko, Nevada. There's another place called D Bar M, and they're in Reno, Nevada. And again, there's a lot of nice places. There's a bigger company called Buckaroo Business. You can try them. Then that's all on, you know, the internet. Let's see, who else? Sarah Hagel has some really, really quality gear. I think she's out of Wyoming. And she also does a lot of horsehair hits. She's got a good McCarty setup. And, you know, it's endless, really, once you start talking about gear. But those are a few that I would try. You know, each year about this time, they have a traditional artist championship. So all these artists have been building bridles and headstalls and reins and bits through the winter months, and then they start auctioning them off. And so there's a trappings event in Alpine, Texas. There's a cowboy artist. Oh, I forget.
There's traditional cowboy artists of America.
Yep.
They have a Western Heritage Classic in Abilene. So sometimes going to that have trade shows that really celebrate those artists, you can find, you know, almost collector type pieces. But you can also find some really quality gear at those events too.
And I get a lot of questions. Why are you buying such nice gear? They're going to go rub it off. Or I try to look at it as a token to my horse. I want my horse to know that I'm putting the best gear in front of him. And I try to work hard to help. You know, I have some friends that braid some reins and some ropes, and I try to, you know, add some value to their stuff and use it every day so that they get to know that their gear is being used too. So,
well, thanks. That helps us figure out how we'd like to look at when we're going to put together our setup with a headstall or a snaffle, and then what type of reins, you know, you might choose. It all comes down to personal preference, but if you can be able to make your personal preference backed upon quality and function, then you really feel like you're investing in some gear that's going to last you for a long time. So on the next episode, what we're planning to do is talk more about just some training tips with the snaffle and how to know when you're ready to progress out of the snaffle and into the hackamore. So thanks for joining us today, Trevor.
You bet. I look forward to the next time.
And now it's song time. This time we're going to step out a little bit for me. I'm usually a Templeton Thompson gal. This time we're going to do some Dan Roberts with Cowhand.com.
On to this brand new ranch. It was owned by a bunch of fancy pants, but they did have several high dollar trucks and trailers. Well, there was barns and pens. It was under construction, and I was informed by phone I'd receive my instruction in a video arriving in a padded mailer. It said, sort the cows in pen 11, then bring us a tag so we can scan them. And I didn't have a clue, but I took a sack full of them to headquarters. There was a lady at a computer typing in numbers, and the more she typed, the more I felt dumber, and she said, yep, 501's too old, gotta go back and sort her. I replied, I ain't no cowhand, cowhand.com. I don't know where I just landed, scroll me back to where I'm from, cause I don't need no printout telling me that it's time to wean. Never seen a calf pulled by a machine, and this information highway keeps my pony sore and lean. I ain't no cowhand.com. Well, my security pass / photo ID opened the gate and picked out a horse for me, and you punch in a code and it start an automatic feeder. Of course, you still had to step over what them cows was downloading, and you did hair analysis with a digital modem, and put a cow up on the screen, it'd tell you which bull's gonna breed her. Well, then they give me this laptop from my saddlebags, and it got dusty out riding drag, and I knew the boss was gonna have my hide. Well, they said, just boot it up. Open the windows. Something about a mouse and a bunch of menus. So I hauled off and kicked it. I kept the windows closed because it was freezing outside. I ain't no cowhand, cowhand.com. I don't know where I just landed. Scroll me back to where I'm from. Because I don't need no printout telling me which stall to clean. Never seen a horse shod by a machine. And this information highway keeps my pony sore and lean. I ain't no cowhand.com. Well, then they start talking downsizing and linking up. I told them I was heading for the tall and the uncut. They could stick that Pentium right in their AOL. They's faxing emails and hazing the web, and they even had a megabyte RAM. That sounds inbred. I reckon those people wouldn't know the difference between a hard drive and a paper trail. I ain't no cowhand, cowhand.com. Don't need no information highway to get back to where I'm from. And I don't need no printout telling me which colt is green. Never seen a bronc broke by a machine. Besides, this little cell phone just don't fit good in my jeans. I ain't no cowhand.com. I ain't no http://, all one word, all little letters, www.cowhand.com. Yep, that's what you get when you try to cross one of them computers with a cowboy.
I always appreciate people that, like, ride enough horses that the gear wears out, right? Like, the guy that my dad grew up riding with on their ranch, he would wear the fenders out on his saddles from riding so many horses.
Yeah.
He'd ride 100 miles a day on the ranch that they had in Wyoming.
That's unbelievable. And plus, like, the tips about how to think about, well, how easily does the buckle come undone? Sometimes I just look at it and I go, oh, I like the way that buckle looks, but I'm not thinking about the fact that I might need to adjust it, or especially if you're riding a bunch of horses. So I don't know. I like tips like that on that you just maybe wouldn't think about when you're just going through trying to pick out what you use next.
Yep, helpful tips.
I would never have thought about the buckle thing.
I know, right?
Yeah. Now, when I go to a tack shop and pick a bridle out, I'm probably going to unbuckle it and rebuckle it, just because that also gives you an idea of the quality of the leather, because it's going to be pliable.
Yes. Yes.
But how it runs through the buckle is huge. Now, if you're riding English, you also have, in addition to the buckle, the keeper and then the runner, the keeper being the leather bit, and then the runner being that loose leather bit that holds all the tabs down. But I don't think most Western bridles have runners on there, do they, once you buckle it up? It just has the one piece. It doesn't have the slidey, uppy, downy one.
Like the keeper?
Well, the keeper's stitched in so that when you put the buckle, when you buckle it up and you push the tab through the keeper, mm-hmm. and then most English bridles have a second one of those that is not yeah. stitched down, thus being a runner, not a keeper. It runs up and down, that you can put the remaining bit of that tab through.
Typically Western bridles, I haven't found all those extra components and pieces.
Yeah. English folks, we like to have lots of bits and pieces and parts. Yeah, the more the merrier. Yeah.
The other thing that I've run into is with buying snaffle headstalls is, or even just bridle headstalls, is that the actual piece that like runs through the bit and back onto the bridle itself is that piece of might be like cut more like a big teardrop, and then it won't run through the eye of the bridle bit that I have.
Oh, that's interesting.
Or different things like that is like, I'm like, oh, really cool bridle, liked that, but didn't try that on when I was at the store or, at the event. And then I don't have anything I can use it with. Unless I get a different bit, which is okay too.
Well, and that made me think of something too about, he didn't really get into snaffle and headstall and silver. sometimes, depending on your horse's side, like you'll see a bridle and it's got silver on it on the side, on the cheek pieces and stuff. But then what happens is when you actually put it on your horse, like the part, you know, that's left over from when you tighten it covers the silver.
Yes, exactly. So, and then what's the point?
Yeah. So sometimes, you know, they make, and I know English bridles have this more than Western bridles. I mean, there's some Western bridles, those that typically have the silver furls on them, but they buckle at the top. And so that way, you know, you're loosening it and tightening it from above, you know, on the pole. And so that makes sure your silver's already always showing and that kind of thing. So
that used to be a common, well, I shouldn't say common. It used to be an easily purchased item was an English bridle that had a buckle on the very center of the pole instead of one at each side at about eye level or so. You rarely see those anymore. And I used to love that because, again, you didn't have all that bulk flapping around their eyes. I always liked those, but you hardly see them anymore.
Yeah. And pro tip on that, it's because it's so hard to make the furls. So if you see an old one in like an antique store and it's broken, buy it because then you can get the furls off of it and then have someone who would make the leather to fit. Like it's easier to make the leather to fit than the silver, if that makes sense.
Because there are still leather makers aplenty, but the silver manufacturing process, that is pretty limited because it kind of has to be done large scale. That makes perfect sense. Very interesting. Yeah. What a great bridal discussion we had today.
Yes, I know.
They say a good rider can hear his horse speak to him, but a great rider can hear his horse whisper. The years he's given me. Nobility without conceit. Friendship without envy. Beauty without vanity. A loyalty without compromise. I borrowed freedom when we rode. The history of mankind and civilization rode with us. His body took the weight of mine and I was carried through. I can still hear that whisper.
For more information on the complete line of horseware turnouts, including Rambo, Rhino, and Amigo, visit horseware.com or ask your local retailer or online supplier for more information on horseware.com.
In this segment, we're covering learning a new discipline, and we have Kelly Buckley on. She's been on with us in our past two shows. She's currently showing in the National Rein Cowhorse Association. The first episode, Kelly just introduced herself and her horse and let us know a little bit about her background. And the last episode she was on, she talked more about what kind of training she was doing with her horse, working on getting him more agile and cow work, and what her training sessions look like with her coaches. And we're excited to have you on today. Also, in previous episodes, Kelly shared with us that her big goal was qualifying for the Worlds in February. And we're really excited to have you on today, Kelly, to hear how you're going and if you qualified.
Yes, absolutely. So I did qualify. So
yay,
that was
congratulations.
Pretty exciting.
Congrats.
Yes, thank you. And then I recently actually just showed at Stock Show as well. So it's kind of been an exciting, busy month for us in the cow horse show world, I guess you would say.
Oh, good. And tell us a little bit about receiving your qualification letter. What was that like?
It was awesome. As I had previously said in the last episode, this has kind of been 2019 was kind of our inaugural year of showing together, as with me and my current horse that I'm riding. And so he's kind of learning the discipline as well. And so am I. So it was very exciting to kind of know that all of our efforts were put to good use, I guess, and we qualified. So yeah.
And remind us what are the qualifications to qualify? How many shows, or what was the point system that you had to mark in order to be able to receive that letter?
Yeah, you have to show it a certain amount of shows, and you have to be in the top 20 within your region. So we accomplished that, and it was, I mean, and we showed against some really tough competitors as well. So I think that's what means the most to me, too, is to know that we kind of stood out there and held our ground with some of the best in the industry.
So, and you said you just recently showed at the stock show. Was that here in Denver, or was that a different stock show in a different state?
Nope. I showed at the Denver National Western Stock Show. So Colorado. Yep. And, it was, what's kind of different about that is they have, it's kind of a 2-day show for stock show. And as the boxing goes, they just have one non-pro limited class. And so in other NRCHA shows or CRCA shows, you kind of have what they call a 1K non-pro limited class and a 5K non-pro limited class. And it's just based on how much money you've earned. So to kind of get the audience up to speed, 1K is what I showed in 2019 and what I qualified for the world show. And then 5K is kind of what my next step would be. So I'll start showing that this coming year, as well as continually showing in the 1K. It gets confusing. But how Stock Show is set up is it's just one general non-pro limited. So you're showing against people that would have only been able to show in a 5K, as well as a couple of just 1Kers. So it's kind of, it's a more competitive class is what I'm trying to say.
And when it's limited to like a 1K or a 5K, is that you've won over 1,000, you've won up to 1,000? How does that, like,
under,
what's the distinction?
Yeah,
under?
Up to 1,000. Yep. And up to 5,000 for the step up class. Yeah.
And so was the stock show part of your show that you're part of your show scheduled for you to get prepared to go to Fort Worth for the world's greatest?
Yes,
for the, it was not for the world's greatest, but
yeah, for the Celebration of Champions world show. Yes. So we kind of used it as a practice show, but it was also kind of, it was kind of a test to see where we have been at. Cause as we, as Lindsay mentioned on the last episode, we have been kind of in winter training mode. So we haven't had a lot of shows, and we've just really been working on the fundamentals and getting everything very correct with my horse. And so we kind of were able to showcase that at Stock Show and see what else we need to tweak on before we start getting into the bigger shows. And of course the world show as well.
And are you going to plan on being at Fort Worth to show in that show at February?
I'm still kind of on the fence. It takes a lot of time and finances and so forth to kind of go to Stock Show, or not Stock Show, I'm sorry, to go to the World Show. And so I'm still kind of trying to decide if this is the year that I want to do that, or if I want to wait one more year since I'm still qualified to show in a 1K class and kind of take another year to just really hone in on our skills and really get it good and then go to the World Show. So we're still kind of trying to decide on that.
Yeah, both of those strategies sound good either way. Whichever way you go, it's going to help you progress and go forward. So
yeah, I feel
that
like
sounds really neat.
Sometimes when you start to learn a discipline, you just need to learn what are the basics and, you know, what's required of me, and then how do I score well? And then you start learning also on top of that, how do I navigate the divisions and what's best for me and my horse? And so it's neat to hear that how you're starting to think about and bringing to awareness that there are added levels of being aware and navigating the field when you start to learn a new discipline.
Absolutely. And it all comes down to, too, as a good showman would do, what's best for the horse. And you don't want to put a horse in a pressured situation that they're not ready for. And so we're just trying to really figure out what's best for him mentally and physically and go from there.
Yeah. Super.
The NRCHA also has like a live web feed that you can watch the world show on. So if you do decide please keep us posted, because I'm sure some of our listeners would love to chime in on the web live, on the live web feed, and be able to watch your runs. That would be pretty exciting.
Yeah,
absolutely. I will for sure do that.
So usually around this time of year, there's lots of people that are starting colts and have new horses going for next year's plan for the fraternities and just bringing any up. Do you have any other new horses in your program that you're doing anything with that are some of your future NRCHA hopefuls?
I do. I have a little 2-year-old mare. She is at a dual smart ray. And she is, her name is Luna. So yes, I've been kind of working with her, and it's been a fun and challenging kind of experience as well.
Do you start them all yourself, or do you have somebody help put the first 30 rides on them, or what does that program look like for you when you're working?
Yeah. I usually do about a month of groundwork with all of our babies and so forth before we kind of send them off, but I do send them to a colt starter by the name of Chance Adams, and he's in Colorado, and he's great if anyone is ever looking for a colt starter. But he spends about 30 days on them, get the first rides done, takes them ranching, shows them a bunch of stuff, ropes on them, shows them cows, all the things that you kind of want a baby to see and get experience to. And then I get them back and kind of just, I really start fine tuning all the things they need to start learning.
And are you going to plan on showing them as 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, or just seeing where their potential leads? What's kind of your goals or your plans, your future plans for them?
So we usually want to try to make a goal of doing fraternities, so showing them as a 3-year-old. But if they kind of don't make it for that, just depending on where they are mentally, then we're not going to push them to do that. So we'll kind of just keep training on them, keep doing all the emotions that you do with that, and then hopeful down the road, show them more as a 4-year-old and 5-year-old.
Neat. And where did your family breed them? Did you guys buy them? How did you find these little guys?
Yeah. So, my mom a few years ago, kind of got, as she got older, she got a little bit more out of the show scene and wanted to get more into breeding horses. So, we kind of have a mixture of some reining mares and some cow horse mares that, we breed. And so we raise all of our own babies.
Awesome. I bet that's a super rewarding process to breed them and then take them all the way to the show pen.
Yes, it's very rewarding. Just, and it takes, I mean, as anyone knows, it takes a long time. So you're looking at, you know, 4+ years before you're even in the show pen.
What else do you have planned for 2020? And what does your show schedule look like?
Yeah, so we have a pretty big plans for 2020. Kind of like I said, we're still going to be showing in the 1K classes at all of the Colorado shows. And I will also be showing in the 5K classes as well. So I'm kind of adding a class to all of the shows that we go to. And we are, as of right now, we're planning on trying to go to all of the Colorado shows that we're able to attend. So there's usually one or two a month starting after March, and we'll just kind of be hitting the road and doing that as time allows.
How do you plan your schedule for the year? What makes you choose what you choose? Is it based on your timing or your work schedule, or do you decide, okay, I want to hit these for the facility type for my horse, or I know who's judging it, or like, what are the things that help you decide when and where you're going to show?
Absolutely. That's a great question. For me personally, being a non-pro, you know, it very much depends on what my work schedule is, and what I can kind of hit most of the time. As I had mentioned, I think in the first episode, my classes are usually weekend classes, which means that the show starts on a Wednesday and goes through Sunday. I'm lucky enough that non-pro limited classes usually hit on a Saturday or Sunday. So usually I'm able to go to all of the different shows. I've never really been one to worry about who's judging it or the facility. I always feel like your horse needs to experience different arenas, and you as a person kind of, you know, need to experience different types of judging and what judges are looking for and so forth, because it's only going to make you improve. So really the only thing I ever worry about is being able to attend, more so for personal work problems or, you know, time, I mean.
Sure. Well, we've really enjoyed you coming on these last few episodes just to help us navigate the classes and the divisions and the requirements for your particular division of rein cow horse, and sharing with us how you went from reining to start learning this, and same for your horse Chunk. And then to share with us that the goals that you set and how you accomplish those goals and what you're doing to prepare, and then, you know, set goals for the next round. So it's been really educational for us, and we've enjoyed visiting with you. If there's anything that you've learned or one tip that you would share for someone who says, okay, I think I'd like to try rein cow horse, what advice would you share?
Just try it. Honestly, the people are so great in the association. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things that I've learned in the last couple of years being part of not only the NRCHA, but like I said, the Colorado Cow Horse Association as well, is the people are so welcoming, and, you know, you don't need to be afraid to try something new. I tried it, and showing in the show world as long as I have, it was kind of intimidating to come into something and worry about not being good at it, but everyone is so helpful, and it's such a great community.
That's great. Well, thank you, Kelly, very much. And like Lindsay said, please let us know if you go to the Celebration of Champions this year or next year. It would be great to be able to share folks with your runtime or, you know, your draws, and let them watch the live feed and really get to see you guys in action. And good luck this year.
Here in our congrats and coming up segment, we'd like to congratulate the Art of the Cowgirl event with Kelsey Love Thomas winning the world's greatest cowgirl. We'd like to congratulate the Idaho girls team who took home the Ranch Rodeo champions, Carmen Buckingham, Bailey Bachman, Kayla Teagues, and Katie McFarlane. Congratulations, job well done. Dylan Sponseller took home the Top Hand Award, and Carmen Buckingham won the Top Horse Award. Rodeo Central won the Top Remuda with Dylan Sponseller, Bobby Jean Collier, Justin Munns, and Morgan Holmes. Congratulations to all of you.
The Fort Worth Stock Show and Rodeo has been going on all of January and will continue into February. They're also celebrating lots of firsts in their new event, one of which is a new tournament-style event where Stacy Schaefer won the very first breakaway roping. The Red Bluff Bull and Gelding sale is just completed, and Justin Wright had two of the top-selling horses. And coming up in February, we're going to have the NRCHA Celebration of Champions. You can find out more about that and their World's Greatest Horseman event at nrcha.com. And then the Stock Horse of Texas will be hosting their first show and awards banquet at the end of February. And you can check them out at stockhorsetexas.org. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you'd like to find the links to today's guests in the show notes, you can do that at horsesinthemorning.com. You can follow Horses in the Morning on Facebook. Just search Horses in the Morning.
You can also have all the Radio Show Network shows with you wherever you go with our free app for the iPhone and Android. Go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. You can also listen on iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Speaking of iTunes, don't forget to rate and review your favorite podcasts. 5-star review help others find the shows.
Special thank you to our sponsors, Horseware.